called Sandra's Peace.
Sandra's Peace!
Their calls for a transparent investigation are being heeded.
It is important that you know and that America knows that we want to make certain that there's transparency as it relates to what occurred and the death of Mrs. Bland.
Another official indicated the officer involved violated standard procedures.
Regardless of the situation, it doesn't matter where it happens, a DPS state trooper's got an obligation to exhibit professionalism and be courteous throughout the entire contact, and that wasn't the case in the situation.
Late on Tuesday, Bland's friends and family held a memorial service in her honor. Authorities are now investigating her death as a suspected homicide.
Pope Francis has gathered mayors from around the world to a two-day conference in the Vatican designed to combat climate change and human trafficking. On Tuesday, they declared that climate change is real, man-made, and must be stopped as a matter of moral imperative. The Vatican invited the 60 mayors to the conference to keep up pressure on world leaders ahead of...
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
This is Rebecca Pierce. I'm a journalist and filmmaker from the San Francisco Bay Area. You can find me at weirdsister.tv, and this is Aboriginal Radio.
Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. All right, this is the Angry Indian. You know, we've been looking around, and as I said a few dispatches ago, you know, it's getting pretty redundant to come up here, to come into the studio, and always have to discuss a black death, a native death, a poor white person's death, you know, a woman missing from the Canadian-U.S. border, a woman missing from the Mexican-U.S. border. You know, it's just bad news all the way you go around. And then we've had more than 100, almost 140 Confederate flag rallies that have got, you know, taken place in the United States since the Dylann Roof attack on the AME church. You know, and of course, many of you know I take that personally because I'm Gullah. That is my family's church. And, you know, it's, you know, it is what it is, right? Here is an act of white supremacist terrorism that is not being identified as an act of white supremacist terrorism. We had John Hauser, who didn't like African people, didn't like Native people, didn't like Spanish-speaking Indians. Turns out he also didn't like white women. And he stayed in five different motels, and he had disguises, and he had a legal weapon, even though he was certified mentally, I don't want to say incompetent, because obviously he was able to function, but he wasn't wrapped too tight. You understand what I'm saying? And he went, and in the middle of a film, decided to start killing people. And, you know, what do we say about that? You know, how many different things have to happen? You know, we had a case that I just heard about today, about a half hour ago or more, about a man in Louisiana who pulls down the trousers of a 12-year-old in a convenience store, backs him up against a counter or against some shelving, and beats him. You know, he was initially going to be charged with simple assault for pulling down a child's trousers in public and then hitting him, assaulting him, cornering him. And, you know, they, after speaking to everybody and realized, I guess, that he couldn't get away with just hitting him with simple assault, he's being hit with simple assault and a hate crime. But yet, you know, the real problem in America is Black Lives Matter. I'm not going to bother to play the audio. That's up to Lupe. She wants to put it on later. Bill O'Reilly says that Black Lives Matter is tearing apart the country. Not the Confederate flag. Not the the flag of treason, the flag of slavery, the flag of white supremacy. You know, we're dealing here with a conundrum, and part of what's making things bad is the press. And we talk a lot about the mainstream press, and everybody bitches about the mainstream press, left, right, and center. But the bottom line with this is,
the information that they're transmitting to the public can either influence them, right, or it can confuse them. But for the most part, it's not doing a whole lot of informing. And, you know, there's a lot of racism going on. And one of the reasons I'm bringing up the mainstream press is, you know, we have someone in the studio. We have an independent journalist here, Andrew Westmoreland. Some of you know him from Twitter as DrewWest_press. We will publish his Twitter address with this dispatch. He works for Argus News Now and several other publications, and he also does his own video journalism, and he's been out there since Ferguson. And, you know, before I go on any further, I want to bring him in on this because we have the Confederate flag being raised again. The Confederate flag ended with the end of the Civil War. Reconstruction came about. It was flown again in South Carolina and other parts of the South by 1961 to prove a point. So we have an act of racist terrorism. We have multiple, almost 140 Confederate flag rallies going on in the continental U.S. We have racial violence happening almost every day. A black child was having a birthday party, and a bunch of white guys in pickup trucks waving these flags came running and insulted everybody, called them nigger. Another area in the South, a woman was just going to get her mail. Guys driving back and forth all day long, Confederate flags calling her and her sons niggers. They own, I forget how many acres down there. They've been in the community for more than a decade. They're still being threatened. So, you know, where's the mainstream news on this? Are they condemning this as acts of un-American activity? You know, if we're going to give them that, right? You know, are they going to address this, or are they going to do what Fox News has pretty much been doing and everyone following along to, you know, magnify these cases in such a way that white people feel threatened by us for talking about these situations rather than threatened by the people who are actually bringing violence? Andrew, but, you know, please, you know, give us your opinions on this, and thank you for coming on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you for having me. No, I absolutely agree. We have a serious problem in America. And unfortunately, this isn't something new. It's been here since day one. Since the European type of people came over here, we've had a problem. As far as the flags, you know, I'm in Virginia, and they just had a group of about 50 vehicles drive down the oceanfront with their Confederate flags waving. Last week, I also did a story out of Norfolk. We have a Confederate monument. And, you know, I was covering that. I mean, we have a serious problem. Serious problem. And with the mainstream media, you know, we get this, you know, this narrative of, you know, one side or the other side, but they don't really give you the actual information, the full history, or, you know, why somebody's doing this or the other. And, you know, it becomes a problem when, you know, all you see is this Confederate flag. And yeah, it does represent hate. But they're not explaining who this group of people are, because they're not just your average everyday person. You know, these people believe in racism, white supremacy, and they're dangerous. They have guns. And when you look at the counter side, you know, when you look at the Black Lives Matter people, you know, most of these people, I would say 95%, probably 100%, don't own a gun. They don't go out and march and rally with guns. You know, these are peaceful people. And the fact that you have, you know, Bill O'Reilly, you know, going on air basically saying that they're destroying America. I mean, it's absurd. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's completely out of hand. But, you know, what I really want to ask you, you know, right now is, as a journalist, you know, you have access to newsrooms. You hear the chatter that's going around the water cooler. What stories are they paying attention to? What stories are they not paying attention to? What are the editors across the country, especially where you are in the South, how are they articulating their editorial stances, if any, against this, you know, very creeping, or maybe not even creeping any longer, you know, this this sprint of white supremacist doublespeak, new speak, you know, whatever you want to call it, in terms of where, like we were talking before we came in, you have the officer Ray Tenzing,
who flat out lied in his written report about what happened and is now wondering why he's under indictment. We have the officer who dealt with Sandra Bland. I can't remember his name right now, but there is audio on YouTube, and I don't know how it was leaked, but it's on my Twitter feed, and we have it published on our Tumblr page, where he called his supervisor the day after, or his supervision the day after the incident of him arresting Sarah Bland, and lied. Said that he was trying to de-escalate it when he wasn't. He said that he gave her opportunities when he didn't. You know, he totally mischaracterized what happened. And the press allowed him to get away with this for quite a bit. So, you know, what do you think is going on? You know, is it the system itself in terms of journalism in the United States at this time? Or is it the people that are doing journalism in the United States at this time?
I'd have to say it's a combination of both. We have to understand that all major professions that have a really public connection are connected to the system of racism, white supremacy. And I don't want to say that everybody who is involved, everyone who's a journalist, everyone who's on CNN or any of these ABC names are racist. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that the institution of their profession very much fuels the system of racism, white supremacy. And unfortunately, that means the information they give out to the public is going to reflect that. So what I have seen in my experience, you know, I have a lot of contacts with other journalists and whatnot and editors. And, you know, for the most part, it's kind of like, you know, some incident will happen and, you know, they're sitting there chatting around. Is this newsworthy? Do they want to put this out? And okay, let's just say it's a police involved shooting. You know, that's the hot topic right now. So one of the things I'll overhear sometimes is, you know, they're talking about the shooting, but when they actually publish the work, it's all one-sided. It's all towards, you know, the police said this and the government said this or whatever. And they kind of dismiss the person who was shot, and they'll immediately put out all their criminal history if they have any. And if they don't have criminal history, then, you know, somehow they dig up these photos of them in a unfortunate situation. You know, they're posing on Facebook with a gun or whatever it takes. They'll use that to try and make this person look like, you know, they deserve to be shot. And that's a trend. I mean, and that isn't something that is only Fox News. This is CNN. This is ABC. This is MSNBC. This is all these. Most of these channels will portray a black shooting victim as a thug or a criminal when that isn't necessarily the case. And to tie into this, for me personally, you know, I went and interviewed a local shooting victim who survived. His name is Marius Mitchell out of Norfolk, Virginia. And, you know, his story is the most incredible I've ever heard. I don't know if we have enough time to go through it all. It's just...
Sure, go right ahead.
Well, the basic premise of the story is he's going to work in the morning. He stopped off at a 7-Eleven type of place. And this unmarked car pulls up behind him. Immediately pulls out his service weapon and is right there on top of the hood of the car. They T-boned him. So the way the position of the officer was, they could not tell it was an officer, according to Marius. So, and he's yelling commands, get back in the car, and needless to say, Marius runs. Now, I've done the research, you know, I did my job. Marius has zero criminal history. He's had no run-ins with the law before. So this guy is running because he's fearing for his life. He just see this guy pull up behind him, all aggressive, pull out a gun on him, and is just yelling at him. So he runs. So anyway, they're running around this 7-Eleven, and Marius does a full circle of it, and he sees a car and he jumps in it. Now, this just happens to be this unmarked police officer's vehicle, but he doesn't get very far because the officers begin shooting at him. So Marius is hit 5 times, once in the neck, and exit wound is just like centimeters away from his jugular. He's shot all up in the chest, under his armpit, and you know, that alone makes you question, okay, how is he shot under his armpit? And then you wonder, he has an exit wound on the outside of his arm, so that indicates, you know, his hands were up. So, you know, that story alone, just that fraction of his story is incredible. And the officer later says that he was caught in the window of the car and was being dragged, so that's why he feared for his life and he needed to fire his weapon. And you know, that's the same story that we heard the Cincinnati officer Ray Tensing say in his report. You know, that's part of their narrative. You know, if it's not, oh, I feared for my life, or it would be, oh, the car dragged me, or he reached in his waistband, and this, that, and the third. So this is widespread. This is nationwide. This isn't, you know, one place or the other. This is everywhere.
Yeah, it's from coast to coast, and I believe it was Daily Kos that saw this, and I do apologize to this man and his family and friends. I do not remember his name, but he's a white man. I believe he's a young father, and he had a bad running with the police, and they killed him. And I have to say, there's not a whole lot of talk about that. There really isn't a whole lot of discussion about that. And, you know, I am kind of curious as to why that is, because there are poor white people who are killed by the police too on a fairly regular basis. But you never hear the All Lives Matter folks talk about poor white people. They talk about white people as being victims. And I'm going to say here right now, because there are neo-Nazis that listen to this show, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. Substantiate your claims. You're talking about, I've heard different figures, anywhere from 600 to 1,000 white women are attacked a day. I hear there's like, you know, 10, 12 white people killed every day by minorities in the United States. Well, then where is the evidence? Where are the reports? Now, the Daily Kos and the local news reported on this Caucasian male that was killed. But if white people really cared about police brutality at all, wouldn't they step up for something like this? Or does it not serve their political, and I'm going to say agenda for lack of a better term, because I don't think a lot of these people have enough political comprehension or education, frankly, to have a political agenda. I think they're just being reactionary and lashing out. Because when I've asked a lot of neo-Nazis who are actually willing to talk to me, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, what is the real beef? Well, we're losing everything. You're taking everything. And then when I point out that there are poor white people, like say in Appalachia, who are being, you know, taken advantage of, in Louisiana, who are being taken advantage of by police officers, by, you know, local authorities in terms of billing, by companies. They never seem to be able to put that together. They just see black, white, Spanish-speaking immigrant, and that's it. So, I mean, as a journalist, you know, how do you deal with this in terms of trying to get a story across to people that this affects all of us and not just necessarily specific groups?
Well, and you brought up a great point that it's popular to only put out when a black person is killed by the police. But when you actually look at the numbers, more white people or other people of other races are killed more. However, black people are more, I think it's twice as more likely to be killed than any other group.
Except for Native Americans. And we've seen what's happened recently. And I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
We had Sarah Lee Circle Bear. There was no reason for her to die in custody like that. They didn't even try to help her. Rexdale Henry. He was a Native American activist that dealt, like Sandra Bland, dealt heavily in his community against police brutality. He died in custody in Alabama. Then we have Paul Castaway. who his mother called the, you know, the authorities to help her control him because he has schizophrenia. They should have taken him to a hospital. He could have been tased. They lied and said that he attacked them with a knife. We see the dash cam video. We realized that he was nowhere near them. He was asking them what their problem was. They had their guns out already. He had a knife to his own throat. He was more of a danger to himself. This is why we pay taxes. They have these tools. They have these tasers. They can taser people in the neck for nothing. They taser a man in his groin 6 times in Philly for nothing. But then we have a case where they could have, you know, taken this man to a hospital so he can get the treatment that he needs. And they flat out murdered him and lied about it. And the press allowed them to get away with this. And other white people, the white majority, allowed this to happen. While they're still hanging dream catchers and talking about their Cherokee great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother who they say was a princess. But yet here we have a slew of Indians being killed and nobody says anything. And then when we really look at the stats with that, Native Americans per capita statistically suffer from police brutality in terms of fatal encounters more than any other ethnic group. But because of the history of the United States and because Indians are invisible, it's a little easier and maybe even more entertaining, I suppose, to hear about a black person being killed by the cops. But as I was saying, when we talk about immigrants, especially from South America and Mexico, when we talk about poor white people, they're almost invisible. Poor white people are almost invisible. And where I'm leading to this before we take a break is, how would you connect this to the sort of angst that we're seeing, say, in Virginia Beach, say where I'm at in Portland, Oregon, the sort of reactionary attitudes of poor white people who feel that they're being hurt by the system and who somehow believe people of color are getting all of these benefits that don't exist statistically and, you know, through anecdotal. I mean, we just don't have it. We don't have it. I mean, there are individuals that have, but we as groups do not have this. So I guess what I'm trying to identify, and I'm asking you as a fellow journalist, is we can see these divisions and how these divisions are being used to keep people apart and to work on certain things that maybe the Koch brothers are interested in. But how can we, you know, use or try to encourage the mainstream media and our independent brothers and sisters that are out there, you know, doing their own journalism to start to be a little more objective in our reporting and not say, have like the Sandra Bland type of rumors that fly about because we get treated badly, we must avoid that type of reactionary thing. And we're witnessing it right now with poor white people, for the most part, that are waving Confederate flags and thinking that if they're able to do this, then somehow their fortunes are going to turn around.
The biggest problem that I've seen isn't necessarily the writer, you know, your local newspaper journalist or your local TV station journalist. And it's not even necessarily the national, you know, big names like Anderson Cooper or something. That they are part of the problem, but they're not the ones in charge. They have almost zero control of what they're saying. The problem is the editors and the producers and the owners of these corporations. You know, when you have independent media, you know, I could say whatever I want and it goes live, you know, it gets published. But when you have this multi-million dollar news agency, you know, everything's heavily edited. Oh, don't say that. Oh, you're going to offend this person. And that's a huge problem. So what we can do to solve that, I personally don't know, but I do know out of experience, the CNN reporter, oh, what's her name? She was in Ferguson recently. I can't think of her name, but one of the female CNN reporters, field reporters, she very specifically, she told my news agency in private, off camera, that she wishes she could go elsewhere because of what they're doing, that they're making her say things that aren't necessarily true or not the entire story. So, you know, and that's a big name. Oh, Sarah Snyder.
Okay.
So, you know, that's just one example of the problem is, you know, when you're getting paid that high amount of money, you know, they're kind of paid actors in a sense, and the actual real reporting gets rushed down to, you know, the local level or the independent journalists. So, you know, as far as trying to correct this problem, again, I'm drawing up blanks here.
Mm. Yeah, because I wouldn't want to put that pressure on anybody. You know, there's no one answer to something like this that's so multidynamic and multi-dimensional in its, you know, the denialism of history, the revisionism that we're seeing. This goes beyond hate. You know, you have the Christian Zionist movement that has something to say about this. There are European Nazis that are using the Confederate flag as a substitute for the German Nazi Party flag from the 1930s. There's a lot going on that's involved in this. And, you know, the sort of attacks that President Obama has been facing from Mike Huckabee in terms of these wild claims that the Obama administration is driving Jews to the ovens. We have a lot of, you know, inflamed rhetoric. We have a lot of angry talk coming from the people who are supporting Donald Trump and his overt racism. And the simple fact that the GOP is not standing up to this, they're going along with it and trying to top one another in their bigotry by using code words. Yeah, it's a real serious situation, and I wouldn't expect anybody to come up with an answer for this, that would be unfair. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're in the virtual studio with journalist Andrew Westmoreland. You can find his work at DreWest_Press on Twitter. He is a community activist as well as a professional independent journalist. He is also a videographer. And, you know, there's just a lot of people who are doing media right here that we're not really hearing from. And they're not really getting a chance to tell the stories that they want to in mainstream news. And we're going to talk about that and some other things. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Hey, this is Vagabond producer, writer, and director Machetero. You're listening to The Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Roseanne Cash for the American Association of Diabetes Educators.
Johnny Cash was my dad. For years, he had diabetes but ignored it, even as his vision and health slipped away. Diabetes is serious. It can steal your sight, your limbs, even take you away from the people who love you. But it doesn't have to be this way. If you have diabetes, test and control your blood sugar regularly. You'll be healthier and you'll feel better too. To learn more, visit healthywithdiabetes.org.
This is Kristen Hirsch from Throwing Muses, and you're listening to a podcast released under a Creative Commons license.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Doing too much. You don't do a dog like that. You didn't have to shoot him 8 times. If he was doing something to you and you was trying to stop him, where do the police shoot you? In the leg. You just shot all through my back.
I just want to say, you know, can we all get along? Can we get along? Can we stop making it horrible for the older people and the kids?
May the Lord protect me as I travel along the way. Jesus. All around me every day.
If you know what it's like to feel helpless, you know what stress is. We careless, cause they ain't hearing us deafness. So many restless parents losing their precious black kid and innocent in the street, laid out breathless. This the land of the free. I'm amazed. Nothing ever changes, repeating the same phase. Just know without blacks, there wouldn't be no USA celebrating Independence Day, but we still treated like slaves. Let's not pretend that reality seems just the normality. Fatalities, no justice for blacks against police brutality. Don't get mad at me, I'm just a messenger. Don't shoot, and we still can't get justice, even if we have proof. It's no secret, blacks the minority and get treated as such. Wonder why we don't respect authority, like how much is enough? As a little girl, thought life was sweet, ice creams and swirls. Sorry for being black in this white man's world, I'm wrong.
Jesus. This guy right here is forcibly trying to lock somebody up for breaking up a fight.
Could have been my brother, Oscar Grant could be my cousin, Eric Garner could have been my daddy. Case closed in the discussion, Sean Bell, John Crawford, Trayvon Ezell, and Judd could have all been my family. You sleep, come down to snoring. An unarmed young black male yapping. Don't justify the fact police is trigger happy. We supposed to feel protected. We feel with anger. Get on the internet, searching for pictures, paint them as thugs and gangsters. Chances are never given. It's getting harder to strive. For greatness seems it's a crime to be black and alive. It's hard to abide by the rules we forever deny. Blindly the blind system ain't set up for us to survive. Will this revolution be televised? Probably not, since we at war with ourselves. So much black on black crime. Do we not have feelings? They quick to say white mass murderers got a mental illness, but let a black male walk the wrong way, look suspicious on a mission, even talk the wrong way. He dead, he should have laid low. Bet he don't get justice. The jury could say whatever. God got the last say so. They provoke us and choke us, or they gun us down. Hope we make it to better times in this white man's world being brown.
I can't breathe. Once again, police beating up on people.
Back up.
Right here.
Back up and get on that step.
Okay.
Back up.
All he did was break up a fight. And this is what happens for breaking up a fight. This shit is crazy.
Go on, chillin'. That's what we to talk about. We need a little help. Can't do this y'all alone. Thank God for this. Yeah. Jim Brown, y'all. Yes, this your evening. One more time. We to ask one of the children for get up. Get into it. Get involved. All 100 children, when I have to come down here to the Gullah Geechee Nation, and so glad that 100 to tune in to we Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio Station. 100 children know this your the head from the body of this your nation and the heart of we station. Queen Quest. Come on, chillin'. Get involved. Get involved. Get involved to the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition, the sponsor of this year radio station. Honey, chillin', this year the We Show, Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio. Come on, y'all.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Cadell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas, smack dab between Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, Atchison. Easiest way to describe it. Put together quite a good show. I think you're going to like it.
Radio Free Kansas on blogtalkradio.com/Pipes in Cotfire.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan. We hate niggers. We hate Jews. We hate faggots. And we hate specs. We people need to get off your ass and wake up. This is America.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is APNS Public Radio.
Okay, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is the official podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. And we're in the virtual studio with Andrew Westmoreland. He is representing Virginia Beach, Virginia. He is a journalist and an independent community activist. You can find him at DreWest_Press on Twitter. You can also find his work at August News Now. there's a lot of things I want to ask, basically, but, you know, for the sake of time, let me ask you, what is the hardest case that you think you've had to deal with as a journalist in terms of dealing with your editors in being able to print what it is you want to, well, not so much what you want to say, but what you're actually observing and the analysis that you have on, you know, particular stories, especially when you deal with police brutality, institutional racism, institutional sexism. You know, because all of these things, I believe, are combined when we're not looking at the class aspects of what a lot of this angst is about.
I've been so incredibly lucky. The outlets I've been with have not editorialized or tried to make me change really anything that I've put out. So I've been incredibly lucky. There's been a couple things that there's been discussions and disagreements about as far as recently, you know, me covering this local story with Marius Mitchell. You know, there's a debate of if we should put something out, like we have 4 hours of interview footage. And the issue with that was that he's about to go back on trial again because the first trial had a hung jury. That's how messed up his case was, that they couldn't even agree if he was guilty or not. So, you know, the disagreement was, do we want to actually put any of this out because it might hurt him? So other than that, I mean, I've been incredibly lucky. Whatever I type up, it goes live on the internet, and, you know, any of the video footage I have, you know, whatever edit comes out, that's what's out. So I've been lucky there.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that, if you have that latitude, I suppose you can do that, but the few small little independent publications I worked in, it was really difficult to get certain stories past a lot of editors. They would just simply say, well, I don't see where anyone has any interest in that. This is just a criminal. So why do you think that there was anything racial about that? And one of the reasons why I'm bringing this up is Kendra Chapman. I believe I have her name correct. She is one of the young African women who died in custody over the past few days. And there's a lot of talk from some black women who really made me realize something. Now, I had heard about her case, and I read a few things, but I didn't really go into it too deep because, frankly, it's just a lot to keep hearing about all of these dead black people and Native folks. And I did look into it after a while a little bit because there was a sister who wrote a very short blog post, but it really hit me in the gut that one of the reasons that we're looking at Sandra Bland more so than we're looking at Kendra Chapman is that Chapman had a criminal history, that she's been in trouble with the law before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people who have had trouble with the police, who may have had to steal for various reasons, I'm not making a judgment call, did whatever they needed to do to make money, I'm not making a judgment call. But because they had that history, when they ran into racist police brutality, we really didn't want to point them out. You know, this is like with what's happening with Bill Cosby right now. I mean, there's a lot of folks who are, you know, of the bourgeois class in the black community who are very embarrassed about this and are trying to pretend now that they never gave a damn about Bill Cosby, right? Because they don't want to be associated. The same way a lot of white people don't want to be associated with Dylann Roof, even though they're supporting everything that he stood for. You know, they want to ignore the violent part, right? But they stand for everything that he was for. You know, we're coming after the women and what have you. And like I mentioned with Bill Cosby, there's that class aspect again. Now, when he gave the pound cake speech, all the black conservatives loved him. Now that this has happened and he represents black conservatism, they don't want to touch him. They don't know anything about him. A lot of black people don't want to deal with this. So in terms of the white racism that we're seeing and the reactionary, this opportunistic acts of this hatred that we're reading about, and you and I are both on Twitter and we see the hashtags and the hate that goes on with the Confederate flag hashtag. What are we to do? Not necessarily as people of color, because they don't like gay people either. And if you really take into account John House's actions, they don't like white women. So, you know, how do we, as the people that they don't particularly care for,
you know, work a little bit more amongst ourselves, maybe even as individuals, in terms of becoming more objective. You know, as a journalist, what would, you know, your thoughts on that be, on how people can move towards being more objective when we see these stories, so that we don't get taken for a ride and we actually understand what's going on?
First point is on Twitter, when we have to deal with these trolls, so to speak. I've blocked literally 300 people on Twitter. It gets that bad. So I have zero tolerance. As far as what can we do with objectivity, personally, I sit back and I ask myself, you know, could this have happened to me? Or I put myself in both sides' shoes, and I try to look at both sides. And that way, I could somewhere kind of fall somewhere in the middle. And with a lot of these things, especially when it's, you know, state violence, when a police officer is abusing somebody, and there's video evidence of it, you know, it's either ethical or it's not ethical. This officer did this to somebody that was against the law, or they didn't follow procedure, they'd use excessive force. You know, how objective can you be about that? I mean, it's just right there in front of your face. So as far as convincing other people to be more objective and look at both sides, that's a hard fight, because you're basically trying to tear down somebody's paradigm. And somebody who is brought up from day one to believe this certain set of rules, or, you know, this is the way the world is, and then you present them with facts that go completely against that, they're going to shut down. So in my experience, you know, going full force at them and, you know, pulling out paperwork and, you know, trying to show them videos and stuff, that isn't going to necessarily work. So on a person to person, it would be kind of like you slowly give them information and try and change them that way. But in mass, I mean, that's a whole nother thing. You're just going to have to counter what is being put out by those in power, those in the mass media. I mean, you just have to, you know, push the counter narrative. I mean, other than that, there's not much else you can do.
Well, I suppose maybe I was looking more in terms of self-education. You know, so when folks are actually looking at the news, when they're listening to NPR, if they're stuck, I mean, I hate to say this, and I've mentioned it before on the show, you look at the Nielsen ratings, they put these reports out to the public every 4 years, and it's broken up by ethnicity. You know, what they consider, you know, what they believe white people are watching, Africans, Spanish-speaking people, and Asians. And what they've, you know, unless anything has changed, I mean, the last time I looked at it, 85% of the viewer, you know, the viewing habits of African people in the United States is entertainment and sports. And when we do look at news, it's Fox News.
Well, that's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, you know, well, one of the things, and this is just, you know, me, and I'm being anecdotal about this, is that I've asked folks, you know, when I go to a lot of black homes, they're playing either BET or Fox News or Fox, you know, program. And I'm like, why do you watch Fox? You know that these guys are bigots, you know. Yeah, but Bill O'Reilly's funny. Sean Hannity's funny. They're, you know, I've been told, you know, that not everything they say is wrong. And, you know, this type of bit. You know, they tap into the conservatism that exists in the black community. They tap into the conservatism within the Native American community, which is very conservative. You know, so those folks who have access to the internet, they have access to cable television and what have you, they, you know, many, not all, but many, tend to have pretty conservative ideas, even if they're pretty liberal with their idea that maybe people should have their own personal lives and be able to do what they want. I you know, as a final question, I suppose, where do we go with so many young people who are not really understanding American history? They're not really and don't have much interest in understanding a lot of these things. I mean, again, look, this is not me. This is the mainstream news. a few years ago reported that they asked some, Oklahoma students in their public school system who the first president was, details about World War One, World War Two, the Civil War, the American Civil War. They couldn't. They were incorrect with most of their answers. You know, I mean, many of them thought that Lincoln was the first president. And it's the 21st century.
How to fix that? I see a lot of progress and a lot of disappointment at the same time. We have the people that just want to, you know, turn on MTV. People still watch that, apparently. And, the crappy reality TV shows, and they have no interest whatsoever. But at the same time, you know, they're connected to Twitter, Facebook, or they watch YouTube, and they're seeing these police shootings or whatever else is big and that goes viral. So, I mean, you have this situation where you have these completely asleep people being exposed to really traumatic, powerful information. So there is an opportunity there, in my opinion. It's not like they're completely unintelligent or they have no interest whatsoever. It's more of, this is how they were socially raised. They were raised by society to, you know, not care about these sort of things or don't have any interest in it. And as far as the black community goes, in my experience, what I've seen is the disinterest is self-preservation. They don't want to get too involved with it because then it becomes too real, and then they start to think about it, and they're like, well, dang, that could have been me. That could have been my son. And it's a psychological protection mechanism for a lot of the black community. They don't want to touch this because they are afraid of what could happen if they decide, I'm going to go in those streets and do what the Black Lives Matter movement has been doing. They're afraid that what happened in Ferguson and the way they were treated when they were protesting, they're afraid that could come to them at their doorstep. And I can agree with that, and I think that is a very big possibility, but at the same time, people have to eventually stand up for themselves. And, you know, I'm not saying be violent or anything like that, but, you know, ignoring the situation does not solve the situation. And, you know, there's ways to do that. You know, you spread information around your family, your neighborhood, your friends, and you go from there. But ultimately, I do see a huge possibility for improvement, a huge opportunity.
Okay, well, you know, Mr. Obama will be back soon from Africa. He went to the motherland. He's coming back. What is he going to do? You know, what should he do? Final thoughts.
I voted for Obama the first time, to be honest. And I would say about year two, I started to regret that. Obama has helped everybody but the black community. And, you know, there's a reason for that, because, you know, if he got elected and then he starts helping black people, then the, you know, right-wing conservatives are going to probably riot. Let's just be honest. They're going to be incredibly unhappy with him. So, you know, I get that. But at the same time, it's very frustrating to see a president who has literally helped everyone he possibly can. He's helped immigrants from Mexico. He's helped gays. You know, he's helped so many different other groups of people, but he ignores his own, and that's very disappointing.
It is, you know, to a lot of us, even if we didn't vote for him. Okay, you've been listening to Andrew Westmoreland. He's out of Virginia Beach. He's a community activist and independent journalist. You can find him at DreWest_Press on Twitter. He writes for August News Now and several other publications. And I really encourage you to check out his work and to follow him on Twitter. He's been out there from Ferguson on, and I don't see him stopping anytime soon. All right, brother.
Thank you.
Okay, peace. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Moment, but I want to get your thoughts on Baltimore. First, we've been watching this very closely. If you were president of the United States, what would you do about this? It's a crisis, not just in Baltimore, but in a lot of other communities around the country.
You know, it's primarily a local and state issue, but the president has the bully pulpit and the president has the eyes of the nation. Look, the issue here is I was a mayor for 8 years. Being a cop is a very, very difficult job. But the word has got to get out that when police act inappropriately, and of course in this case there has to be a thorough investigation, but for too many years, too many mostly black suspects have been treated terribly and in some cases murdered. That is unacceptable. And police officers have got to be held accountable for their actions. Second of all, in the neighborhood where this gentleman lives, as I understand it, the unemployment rate is over 50%. Over 50%. What we have got to do as a nation is understand that we have got to create millions of jobs to put people back to work, to make sure the kids are in schools and not in jails. So short term, we've got to make sure that police officers have cameras. We've got to make sure that we have real police reform so that suspects are treated with respect. Long term, we've got to make sure that our young people are working, they're in school, they're not hanging out on street corners.
So as president, though, what do you do? I mean, how do you fix those problems? We've been hearing about those problems, as you and I know, for decades.
I've, along with John Conyers of Michigan, I've introduced legislation which would create a million jobs for young people in this country in some of the hardest pressed areas of America. Real unemployment is a serious problem in this country. We've got to put our people back to work. I think the federal government has got to work with state and local governments to make sure that we move toward in Burlington, Vermont, when I was the mayor, called community policing, where police are perceived as part of the community, the good guys, rather than as interlopers, people who are from the outside coming.
Curious or confused, get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
Dance to ya, kakio ni wakuma kantik. Winston Watanini, Miksuachi, Saskatchewan, ne utsian.
I am Winston Watanini. I am from Mik, Saskatchewan. Knowledge is power. We must gather knowledge to protect our children, our culture, our future. Learn the ways you can protect yourself and others from infection and spreading HIV. Teach others what you have learned. Together, we can make a difference.
ASADA, terrorist or survivor of terrorism. With the news of the posting of an additional $850,000 for the return of former Black Panther and Black Liberation Army member ASADA Shakur from Cuba, the U.S. government has taken another step in its ridiculous so-called war on terrorism. They did this by New Jersey officials branding ASADA with the latest libelous label, terrorist, in an attempt to justify this modern-day slave bounty. If anybody knows about terrorism, it's Americans, for this nation was founded in terrorism. So deep is this truth that it lies in the subconscious of almost every American and can be unleashed with unnerving ease. Come on, complete this phrase. The only good Indian is a blank. Black, white, rich, or poor, that phrase echoes in American consciousness, an inheritance from a time when those dark thoughts were dark realities of, yes, genocide against the native peoples that fed and healed the starving settlers from Europe who survived the Atlantic crossings. Terrorism, white terrible violence against red life and black life and brown life and yellow life. That is America's truest hidden history, hidden beneath lies about all men are created equal. In 1973, when Assata Shakur and Zaid Malik Shakur and Sundiata Akoli were stopped on the New Jersey Turnpike, they weren't stopped because the cops wanted to render assistance. This was a car stop for the unwritten crime of driving while black before we developed the term, and the cops tried to kill every Black Panther in that car for this unwritten crime. Zaid was shot to death, and Assata was shot twice. And in an act of arrogance that only American judicial terrorists can devise, she was charged with murdering both Zaid and the cop that tried to kill her. Assata went through a devil's brew of show trials in several states, best summed up in a book by her lawyer aunt, Evelyn Williams, titled Inadmissible Evidence. These were trials that seemed more fitting for Mississippi than Middlesex County, New Jersey, or Manhattan Borough, New York. But no matter where that happened, they featured all-white juries and ambitious judges who didn't even pretend to be fair and unbiased arbiters. Even despite these obvious obstructions, she was acquitted. And when she was convicted in Middlesex, it was clear this was a verdict not of her guilt, but of her political ideas. To label this woman a terrorist is to bleed all meaning from the word. For during her life as an activist, during her wounding at her arrest, and during her travails as an accused in courtrooms that were more lynching posts than halls of justice, she was terrorized by a system that wanted to punish her for daring to rebel. These words are written on May 13, 2005, 20 years to the day from the police mass murder and bombing of the Move Home in Philadelphia. Today, 20 years later, only one person, Ramona Africa, ever spent a day in jail. What of those cops who shot and bombed unarmed children? What of the politicians who unleashed these dogs of urban war? Like Ramona, Assata was jailed for daring to survive. Cuba's valiant Fidel Castro responded almost immediately to announce his refusal to recognize this modern-day slave bounty. He pronounced her a political prisoner during her time in American gulags, perhaps remembering that she was held in an all-male jail during her incarceration. For centuries, nothing has so stirred up American fury like the escape of a slave. That ain't just distant history. For daring to slip her bonds and escape from brutal and unjust bondage, the empire now labels her a terrorist. That's because to them, nothing is more terrifying than resistance to their imperial will. As for terrorists, if they really want to find some, it shouldn't be too hard to find them. Just check the White House. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African-American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Or whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this the piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. Available most easily at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a Listen Live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? Head on RadioNetwork.com.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It ends on Newsday.
Nowhere can you get that special feeling than when you're idling up the bombs. There's no business like war business.
Hello and welcome to Dark.